But the end thereof is death. That's right. Now, if we look to ourselves, that's the ultimate end that we can expect. What about if we look to somebody else? In Colossians chapter 2, Lynn, Colossians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul warned of the traditions of men because he said the consequence of that is it will do what to you? Lead you away from the truth. In fact, he uses the word spoil. It will spoil you. Let no man spoil you by these traditions or the traditions of men. Traditions of men will do that. To spoil, it'll ruin you. And we noted in Matthew the 15th chapter, also in your list of passages to remember, Randy, the passage is talking about washing before you eat. And Jesus rebuked the Pharisees and he said that their traditions did what to them? Vain worship. So we see that either looking to myself or looking to other men, the results are not good. If we look to any man, whether it's myself or some other man, as the source of authority, the end is just not good. It'll spoil me. It'll cause my worship to be vain. It'll result in spiritual death. And so the need to look to God for everything that we do is very important. Now, in our last study, we emphasized the text of Colossians chapter 3, verse 17, which says, John, Colossians chapter 3 is not up there. Verse 17. We have a song that we sing. That's the one. Now that's found where? 3:17. That's right. You're good, aren't you? Colossians 3:17. She's got it. We were talking earlier, by the way, and those of you in the class, and for Donna's benefit and for everyone's benefit, she was asking me, she said, how do you remember where these things are found? She said, I remember the verse, but sometimes I have trouble coming up with where it's found. I said, well, that's not uncommon, is it? And remembering the verse, to quote it, if you get it started for me, I can quote it. That's not uncommon, is it? Most of us are that way. And so how do we resolve that? Go over it and over it and over it and over it. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to spend a lot of time in repetition in this class. But here we see that there are some who really don't get this point because they raise the question or the statement, we don't really need authority, divine authority, for everything that we do. And what better statement to make to show that we really don't respect divine authority? We really don't need authority for everything we do. You ever have anybody tell you when you call in question the various religious practices, well, we do a lot of things for which there is no divine authority. If there is, we best stop. Because the Apostle Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 11, what did he say there, Daniel? If any man speak, let him speak as it were the oracles of God. And then in 2 John verse 9, what does that tell us, Mr. Peters? 2 John verse 9. Abideth not, he hath not God. Now that makes it important that we have divine authority for everything that we do, everything that we practice. In our last study, we looked at Cain and Abel, did we not? And we saw the difference between these two sacrifices, and we see what it means to act by faith. How does faith come? Passage. Romans 10, 17. That's the one. And of course, we also noted that Cain and his sacrifice were rejected because it was not what God had commanded. Notice again, authority comes when God speaks. We can't act upon the silence of God. We didn't get that far? Well, maybe we need to talk about that. Okay? Hebrews 11 tells us that by faith, I studied this just recently with somebody, by faith, it tells us, that Abel yet speaks. By faith, he offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, Hebrews 11, verse 4. And through it, though he be dead, yet speaketh. Abel been dead a long, long time. But yet, from the example of Abel, we still learn a lot of things. Abel speaks, though he is dead, the Hebrew writer says. What does he say? Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. How do we know that? Because Abel acted by faith. And again, how does faith come? By hearing. You cannot act by faith. when God has not spoken. Does that make sense? You cannot act by faith when God has not spoken. The reason we want to emphasize that and drive that point home is there are a lot of folks that think that acting by faith means doing something and feeling good about it. And that's simply not so. But it's a different source, isn't it? And therein lies the problem. We either look to heaven or we look to human authority. Now here's a man who's looking to a book written by humans, claiming that it represents divine authority. But yet the Apostle Paul, we're going to talk about this, identified that the things he preached were of divine source. And if any man, whether it be us, that is an apostle, or even an angel, preaches unto you another gospel, let him be accursed. Now, does that include these writings to which you just made reference?
Well, what I was thinking while he was talking was, ultimately, we have faith in the words of men, too, because men were inspired to write these words. But that's where the miracles come in.
Ah. So it substantiates the source. They didn't speak of themselves. The source of the message means that they were ambassadors of Christ. And, of course, the Bible tells us that where? Yes. Yes. Oh. I was really getting excited there for me. Yeah, you are. Look at verse 20. Yes. Verses 18 through 20. But the point being is, here you have inspired men, the New Testament apostles and prophets, who bore the signs of an apostle. They bore their credentials, the evidence in the miracles that were indisputable that they performed. Now going back to our illustration here, God will not accept substitutes. Cain obviously brought something that was different from what God had commanded. And consequently, he was rejected. In our last study, we didn't talk about this one, did we? Nadab and Abihu, open your Bibles to Leviticus chapter 10 and put this passage in your list of passages to remember. Leviticus chapter 10. Amy Childs, would you do some reading for me, please? Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Notice that. They offered a fire, it tells us, which God had not commanded them. Question, Amy. Look carefully at that text. Did God tell them not to offer the fire they used? Exactly. But did He tell them not to?
No.
Did He have to?
No.
But He did tell them to. John?
What was it? Maybe just looked at this sort of thing in a totally different way. People say, well, we do lots of things that it doesn't directly work on us. Well, in this case, He didn't say don't use this fire, but He did say don't use this fire. When He said use this fire, He said use this fire.
Well, what we're wanting to look at is He didn't give them a direct, specific order, don't do this.
But
yes, exactly the point. He did say, do this. And what we're learning on this is how authority comes. Authority doesn't come on the premise of silence. We can't act when God is silent. The way that God instructs, He says, do this. Now we know that's right. When He says, do this, we know we can do that, and that's what He wants us to do. When He's silent, and I say, well, how about this? I believe I'll do this. If I go ahead and act on that, I'm acting on the basis of silence. I don't know that God will accept that or not. But based upon these illustrations, we have good reason to believe he will not.
I guess I never, the way I see this, he is not silent. He very much specifies what to do, and that does specifically exclude as well as it can.
But that's the point, is that if all kind, meaning the denominations, they do every kind of thing, does it say, it doesn't say not?
Well, it does.
No, but that's their argument. It doesn't say, don't play guitar, don't play organ, don't. It doesn't say all that. And that
gets us into trouble because some are looking for a specific prohibition. Yeah. I can do anything, and of course, we're going to talk about this in lesson number 2 or 3, I believe it is, how authority is established in terms of attitudes that we have toward the divine record. Some say we are at liberty to do anything that God has not expressly forbidden. We can do anything that God has not expressly forbidden. And so unless I find an expressed prohibition, then I may act. That reflects an attitude of authority, all right. It means I have a liberty given to me. Unless God has said specifically, don't do this, then I'm at liberty to do that. Now, you're correct in your understanding that by God's silence, in principle, he said, don't do that. But what we're looking for is, how do I know that God wants me to do this? The only way I can know anything and act by faith is based upon what God said, not acting upon His silence. Go ahead.
The only reason I bring that up there is I've always seen it as, if He truly is silent on something, it's really not important. So, I don't, or it doesn't matter to Him, like, you know, whether or not you have a cross there, or what color your carpet is, or anything like that. He doesn't say it on.
Yeah. What we want to do in this series of studies, what we're going to see in this series of studies, is how God speaks. Sometimes talk about the thunderous silence of God, and this is where you're hitting all around. When God is silent, that speaks to prohibit, but it doesn't specifically. In other words, it's not a specific prohibition. For example, you tell your child, send him into the grocery store with $10, buy a gallon of milk. He comes back with a gallon of milk and a candy bar. You say, well, where did you get the candy bar? Well, I bought it in the store. Well, who told you to buy a candy bar? Well, but you didn't say not to. Now, that reasoning is prominent in the religious world. Well, you didn't say not to. And so because God didn't say not to, it gives me the right to act. Now, remember, our definition of authority is right to act. How do we know that we have a right to act? The only way I can know that is when God speaks. Because I can't act when God is silent. Silence doesn't grant permission. Now, you're right in your position that silence, in a very real sense, prohibits. But it doesn't expressly prohibit. In other words, it's not God saying, don't do this. And that's what some are looking for. They look down through the list of 10 commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Where did God say, thou shalt not do such and such? Well, I can't point to the verse that says that. But what I can do is show how authority is established, and it's established when God speaks. I cannot act upon His silence. And so this is how authority is established. And we're going to explore that. We're just getting started, so hang on. Some of the things you introduced are in the realm of expediencies, and we need to talk about that. But there's some things that need to come first. Expediencies are authorized, but they are authorized only when God speaks, and we want to see how that proceeds in an orderly fashion. I got some before you, Joey. I got David, and I think I had Dick. Did I see your hand?
No, I got something I didn't say, though.
Oh, okay. Well, hold that thought then. David, and then back to Dick. And Terry, did I see your hand a while ago? Okay, and then Joey. You're following him. All right. True.
He or she is teaching history at the time, and history is what you're learning. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 2. Now, the Lord does speak here. I mean, he shall not add to the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. You do not add or take away from.
All right.
So when they're silent, you don't add to them.
That's right.
And then also, it has more on that in Proverbs 30 and verse 6 and Revelation 22 and verse 18.
Signpost.
Yeah.
Scattered throughout the Bible.
As it even says in Revelation, your name will be taken out of the book of life for doing something.
Yep, like can't be added to it. That's right. Dick?
I've been to a lot of different churches where they do a lot of action. And we don't do a lot of action here. In 1 Timothy 3, 8, it says, I desire therefore that the men pray at every place, lifting up holy hands without wrath and disputing. Now lifting up holy hands, a couple of places in the Bible, they talk about lifting hands. But we don't lift hands. But a lot of churches where they do lift hands, and actions like lifting hands. So I just brought it up because it is in the Bible by Paul in two different locations.
Okay, that's true. Terry and then Joey. Hadn't got to that yet. Hold that thought. We're going to talk about Noah.
I'm sure we're going to study when that wood was specified, that did that exclude all other kinds of wood?
It did. But they weren't specifically prohibited. God didn't give a laundry list and say you can't use oak, you can't use hickory. He said use this. Not at all. Yeah. We got a whole lesson on that. Specific and generic authority. Joey?
The point I was going to make is similar to what Terry just said. While it's true that God in certain places does give us commandments prohibiting certain things, like thou shalt not do this, shalt not do this, it clearly was never his intention to specify everything in the Bible that we couldn't do.
All right. Specific authority and generic authority. Oh, that's true. It'd take 10 boxcars to carry just a little bit of it.
So God communicates with man efficiently.
Yeah.
He doesn't tell you everything you can't do. He simply tells you what he wants you to do.
That's true.
And that rules everything else.
You all want to talk about generic and specific authority, but you want to do it tonight. I got a whole lesson on that. Okay. Yes, they do.
And stuff. Just like the kid with the candy bar, well, you say, okay, that's all right. It's fine. When it goes to the end of it, you could be buying drugs or anything else.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Something that you definitely didn't want to have.
So we got to establish the principle.
So
yeah.
If you don't establish that principle way back at the beginning, you might look at one little step. And that's how a lot of people in the church and in the denomination, too, because the denomination didn't start off with
we wind up where we don't want to be. True. Oh, well, can I talk about Nadab and Abihu first?
Yeah, I thought you were done with that.
I'm not done with that. Thank you. I got one more point I want to make on that.
The point that David's making is an interesting one. We need to understand the nature of error. Error propagates.
Oh, yes.
Okay? It goes from little to worse, and in time, the error propagates. And the analogy that you've maybe heard from some people is, you know, if you aim a spaceship at Pluto, but when you take off, you're just a tenth of a degree off. Just a little bit. By the time you get to Pluto, you miss it by millions of miles.
You do. You're way off.
Because the error over time propagates it, and bad goes to worse.
That's right. Yes. John, where were Nadab and Abihu to get their fire?
Somewhere else.
You're good. I got it. That's true. Where else? How we know that?
Leviticus 16:12.
Carolyn, read it for me. I don't know why y'all didn't say that.
16:12. He shall take a fire pan full of coals of fire from upon the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground sweet incense, and bring it inside the veil.
All right, they were to get their fire from the coals of the altar. John, where did they get theirs? Somewhere else. That's right. We don't know where, but we know where they didn't get it. They didn't get their fire from the coals of the altar, and consequently God sent fire from heaven and consumed them. Now verse 3, Amy. Leviticus 10, verse 3. Who were Nadab and Abihu, Randy?
Sons of Aaron.
Sons of Aaron. What was Aaron's role? He was the high priest. So therefore, Nadab and Abihu, who were they to be? They would eventually be high priest. And yet we find that when God sent fire from heaven and devoured them because they presumed to get a fire from some other source to burn their incense, God was so displeased with them with such a minor deviation from what He had told them. He sent fire from heaven and consumed them. Would you think that if that happened to your sons, you might shed a tear, you might cry, you might say something, you might shout or do something ugly? Aaron held his peace because God said, I will be glorified. I want to ask you, when we begin to deviate from just a little bit from what we know God said, doesn't take much, Joey. We're showing dishonor and disrespect to the God of heaven who is the source of authority. We've got to know that. Now then, Nadab and Abihu illustrate once more that God will not accept substitutes. Now, John, let's get back to our definition. Authority means the right to act. The right to act. Nadab and Abihu had no right to act because the fire that they used, God was silent. What authority then did they recognize? Wasn't divine. Came from some other source. What was the source of the authority for the fire that they used? Man, self, in this case, yes. Exactly right. Now then, Mr. Chris, let's talk about King Saul. 1 Samuel chapter 15. Would you read for me beginning at verse 1, please? 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 1. Verse 2.
Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, I have marked that which Amalek did to Israel. He had set himself against him in the way when he came up out of Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass.
All right, anything in verse 3, Daniel, anything in that that's ambiguous, that you wouldn't understand what God's saying that you should do? No difficulty understanding, is there? What did God tell Saul to do? Utterly destroy them. Destroy who?
Everything.
What about them? Everything. Destroy all that they have. Nothing confusing about that, is there? Well, certainly not. Then what did Saul do, Chris, beginning at verse 7 through verse 9?
Agag. The king of the Amalekites alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatlings, and the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. But everything that was wild and refuse,
did Samuel or did Saul do, Megan, what God told him to? No, he didn't do what God told him to. Notice, if you will, that God knew what Saul did, and what was his attitude about it, Chris, at verse 11.
Verse 11.
Well, what did God say Saul did? God said that Saul turned back from following me and hath not performed my commandments. That's what God said. But what is it now that Saul said? That's where you are, Chris. What is it that Saul said? Well, it wasn't my fault. After all, I really did what God said. No, he didn't do what God said. He did not do what God said. Look at verse 13. It says, "And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou of Jehovah, I have performed the commandment of Jehovah." Was that true? No, he had not done what God said. By the way, 1 Samuel 15 goes in your list of passages to remember. 1 Samuel 15, King Saul. I want you to notice that King Saul did not do, but he said he had. "I have performed the commandment of Jehovah." Samuel said then, "What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" And Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto Jehovah thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." I love the play on these words. Well, we utterly destroyed everything, but they brought these things back. You ever try to separate yourself from the crime involved? Jumped right out of the fire, yeah. Somebody else responsible dodged the blame. Well, certainly we see that again when Samuel rebukes him. Look at verse 20. Saul is still arguing his case. "And Saul said unto Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of Jehovah." I've done it. Now his desire was to bring back Agag and the best to make a sacrifice out of him. Could we not reason plausibly that, well, if he's going to make a sacrifice, he is going to ultimately kill them? God said kill them. So, bottom line, did he obey God? Well, where was the authority to offer a sacrifice? Did God tell him to offer a sacrifice? Did God tell him not to offer a sacrifice? Nothing said about sacrificing. John? Yeah.
I don't know how you read it, but every time I read this story, is, you know, he was in on it. He knew that he didn't obey God, but, you know, he came up and said, I did it. And then, you know, then he was confronted. He said, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, just like the 4-year-old that takes, you know, 2 cookies. Oh, well, 2 of them were for you. No, they weren't. He wasn't going to do that until he was confronted and said, well, this is what I was going to do anyway. So it's,
yeah. That's authority. That's authority. That's the purpose of the study. Yeah?
We see it over in the New Testament in Matthew 7, you know, where it says, not everybody says to me, Lord, Lord, but it says, when did we see you?
Yeah. Arguing their case. Again, Matthew 25, the great judgment scene. Here were some who were told to depart. Well, why, Lord, are we told to depart? Well, in that day, what are you going to ask? Well, didn't we do this and this? No, you didn't. You didn't do it to the least of these. And so consequently, depart. Joey and Bruce.
You see how a man thinks here. Did you do God's will? Well, yeah, mostly. Close enough. You see, that's how a man thinks. And when it comes to the commandments of God, you know, close ain't good enough.
It ain't
good.
With a capital A.
But that's how a man thinks. Well, sort of mostly. I mean, I came close to doing it. I mean, isn't that good enough to come close? That's how a man thinks. And that's
true. Bruce?
He didn't want to appeal to man, but God had not struck him down, so he was really trying to convince him all that he could do just because, you know, he was king. Convince him, you know, if I convince Samuel, the human thing, then I'll be okay.
Yeah, well, true.
You see, the human thinking, we do what God tells us, that's what we want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids and their homework.
Yeah, you're right, John. We argue this way too. It's not just something that children do. I've heard brethren make these same arguments.
I think you begin to see in this example in others, in terms of human thinking, you begin to see a theme of pleases me, it must therefore please God.
Yes. Yes. And that recognizes human authority. And human authority, if you'll pardon a Kentucky expression, won't cut the mustard. Joey? Got you already. All right. Notice, if you will, please, Samuel's rebuke of King Saul. Samuel said, "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice." Now, I want you to notice in these two illustrations that we've just offered regarding Nadab and Abihu, well, we can even go back to Cain and Abel. When we look at Cain, we look at Nadab and Abihu, we look at King Saul, do we not see in all three of these illustrations men who are seeking to do something they believe will be pleasing to the Lord? In every one of them, we see all three of these illustrations, men who have not totally abandoned God in their knowledge. They're attempting to worship or to serve in some way the God of heaven. But at the same time, in their effort to worship or to serve God, they're implementing human authority to do it. And friend, it won't work. It didn't work with Cain. It didn't work with Nadab and Abihu. We see the rebuke of King Saul in 1 Samuel 15, and consequently he was rejected from being king. And the thing that he did, even though he was attempting to offer a sacrifice unto the Lord, was called by Samuel rebellion, stubbornness, made equivalent with witchcraft. Now look at that. Here's a man who's seeking to worship God, but it's made equivalent with rebellion, stubbornness, and witchcraft. David?
But the burnt offering is vain if it's not done with obedience and honor to God. If you're disobedient in His torpor, and that's how you got your animal for your sacrifice, you're disobedient anyway. The sacrifice is no good.
Well, that's right. That's right. Terry?
It's also interesting to know that this exchange between Samuel and Saul, that Samuel didn't contradict Saul when Saul said, "I have sinned." We see that this lack of respect for authority can't be divorced from that.
It is. It's sinful. It's sinful. Now, Sarah, let's talk just a little bit about intentions. In these illustrations we've looked at with Cain and with Nadab and Abihu and with King Saul, their intentions appear to be honorable. But do honorable intentions make the practice all right? No, not even to offer a sacrifice, because he had abandoned the will of God. Turn in your Bible to Romans chapter 3, verse 8.
Can I just make one statement? Because there in where it talks about that he asked for his sin forgiven, but he also said, because he feared the people. And that's the reason why he did all that.
Saul is king. The responsibility is his. The buck stops with him. He led the people down the wrong path that Samuel called rebellion. Passage over here. Romans 3, verse 8. Who has it for me? Yes, Chris?
"And why not, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, let us do evil that good may come, whose condemnation is just? What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise. For we before laid to the charge both of Jews and Greeks, that they are all under sin, and it is written, there is..."
Let's pause right there. Let's notice that statement. Let us do good that evil may come. Let us do good that evil may come. We kind of got things turned around here, don't we? What's wrong with that? Huh? Did I sure enough? Yes. Let us do evil that good may come. You mean that's what it says? Indeed. Liam?
I can't help but remember Uzzah, when David and was bringing the ark back. Apparently he thought he was doing a good thing. God didn't even listen to him. He didn't even wait for it.
No argument made. Not time for it. He died. Yeah. And so did Nadab and Abihu. And Cain cast out. No argument. David.
Question. When a person ignores what the scripture says and they go beyond and do what they feel like, isn't that approaching blasphemy of the Holy Spirit?
Well, yes. It's casting aside the revelation of the Holy Spirit. Yes, very much so. And we can talk about that, but yes. Bottom line, that's what you've done. Let us do evil that good may come. Is it ever justified for me to say, well, I'll do this. I know God didn't say to, but I'll do it anyway because I think that the results are going to really be good. No, that will not work. The end does not justify the means. But it's not a good work. What we want to establish, and that's a very good point. Sometimes we reason that because I think it's good, that means it's good. All right, so you and I make a majority. Therefore, it overrules God. No. Notice, if you will, in Romans 2, verse 10. Romans 2, verse 10. No, that's not right. Ephesians 2, verse 10. You wouldn't have said that. That didn't sound right. Ephesians 2, verse 10. Chris Simmons, what's that say? Say that again. Good works, what's the source of good works? Which God prepared before. The American Standard says, which God afore prepared. The point being, the source of good works are those things that God has prepared. Now, how do you know whether God has prepared this particular action or not? He tells you. That's a novel thought, isn't it? I know it's good when God speaks. If he addresses it, says to do this, that's a good work. Not just because you think it's good. Now, Joey, I'm going to pick on you.
Let me pick my mic.
Okay.
Let us do evil that good may come. Sure reminds me a lot of there's a way to seek right and demand of the other of the ways of death. Those two concepts are so similar, aren't they?
And you know what I was about to do, to pick on you?
Ask me if that's in Proverbs 14:12.
That's exactly what I was You read my mind. That was exactly what I was going to do. That's the point. Yes. Let us do evil that good may come. Makes me the standard of good, doesn't it? What seems right to me to be good. But the end is death. Just because I think it's good doesn't make it good. But if God has afore prepared it, I can read it in the Scriptures. I know it's good. David? That's the problem. Yeah. Do I have time for just one more illustration? Or at least to start it? Who's my timekeeper tonight? Okay. I got plenty of time. Oh, I love it. Second Chronicles, little David. Second Chronicles, real big now, where I can hear you all the way to the front. Beginning at verse 16, what does it say? Pardon me? Second Chronicles. Second Chronicles. Second Chronicles. That's wrong. 2 Chronicles 26. Verse 16. David? All right, let's pause right there. We're reading about King Uzziah. The context of this passage, beginning at verse 1, tells us a number of great things that King Uzziah did. He was king, Israel or Judah? King in Judah, that's right. We find that there were a lot of idolatrous practices that have been introduced in Judah. King Uzziah tears down their altars. He restores temple worship. But verse 16 tells us that when he was strong, his heart was lifted up. Now he's doing bad things. Specifically, one bad thing that he did, Amy, while we're on this text, read for me verse 17. 2 Chronicles 26, verse 17.
Then Amaziah, king of Judah, took counsel and sent to Joash, the son of Jehoahaz.
Now, 2 Chronicles 26. 2 Chronicles 26, verse 17.
Then Azariah,
that reads better,
the priest, thank you, entered after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men.
Verse 18. Let's pause right there. We're talking about a king. King Uzziah. What was the tribe that King Uzziah was from, Lynn?
I know it wasn't Levi.
It wasn't Levi. Now, you know this. The kings in the southern kingdom from David were of the tribe of Judah. That's right. Now, King Uzziah, an honorable man, done a great number of things in the nation or in the kingdom of Judah. But yet he presumed to function as a priest. Now, Azariah, the priest, and with him 80 priests go into the temple where Uzziah is. Can you imagine that? Here are priests, but they're challenging the king. And their criticism of the king is, King Uzziah, it pertaineth not to thee to offer incense. What are they telling him? You don't have any authority. You're the king, but you have no authority to function in the temple. Now, that's important. Let's get the point. We can use these illustrations. By the way, add 2 Chronicles 16 to your list. It pertaineth not to you, King Uzziah, to burn incense. Why? You're of the wrong tribe. You're not a priest. Though you be king, though you be of the lineage of David, you are not a priest, and you can't function that way. What happened to King Uzziah? No, he didn't. But he did say for priest to do that. All right, now here we're getting into the point of our study. We have authority to act when God speaks. When God is silent, we do not have authority to act. All right, what happened to King Uzziah? Bruce?
He received leprosy
and he died. That's right. He became a leper that very day and he died a leper. You want to tell me that this little breach wasn't all that significant? It was very significant. He too was smitten because of his sin. Now certainly we see that only priests were authorized to do this. And though Uzziah was a very popular fellow, a great big fellow on the totem pole, he was king. But he could not substitute himself for the Levites. Couldn't do it. Now, are we getting the point here in these illustrations? We see a consistent pattern beginning to unfold, do we not? These men had the legal or rightful power to act when God spoke. When they presumed to act where God was silent, they're acting upon human authority, and God smote all of them. Lynn? Yeah. Didn't come through the back door with it. Straight up about it. That's right. That's right. Now let's look at her definition again. To act with authority means one has the jurisdiction or the acts by the orders or instruction of one who has the rightful power. All these had no jurisdiction, no orders or instruction or legal or rightful power for what they did. David, Joey. That's right, Joey. What's our passage? Not dependent on God, dependent on ourselves.
Oh, well. The one I already quoted, Proverbs 14:12.
Yeah.
Jeremiah 10:23.
Good. Good. That's right. Yeah.
But interesting enough, that these things that these people did that they had no authority to do, in and of themselves, they seem like good things.
To men.
It's not like they were doing horrible, illegal things. In one case, we're talking about, I brought it back to offer sacrifice. Offering sacrifice is a good thing, right? Burning incense. Well, gee, that's a good thing. But they didn't have the specific authority to do it. The act itself, on the surface, seems like a good thing, but you see how these people rationalize that they could do it when, in fact, they couldn't.
I want to hone in on one little thing that you said in just a moment of time. You said they didn't have specific authority to do this. We want to be careful of making statements like that, because if we're not careful, there'll be somebody who'll say, well, where do you have specific authority to do this? And what that helps us to see is how some deviate in their thinking. We do not have to have specific authority to do something, but we must have authority. And that gets into our lesson of generic and specific authority that we're going to get to down the pike just a little bit. So we want to look at this. We don't have to have specific authority to act, but we must have divine authority. And that behooves us then to understand how authority is established. And the direction I'm going with this is, we only have authority to act when God speaks, either through direct statements, approved apostolic examples, or necessary inferences. Once we've established the authority for the action, now we begin to see some things that may involve specifics or generics, where things are loosed or bound, and that's where it gets gnarly, and we want to be careful of how we word things. Train our minds to think in a certain way, lest we lead somebody to the wrong conclusion, thinking, well, we must have specific authority. Now, there's a number of illustrations where that's caused problems among the people of God, where some are looking for specific authority for something, and we divide over something where there is authority, but it's not specific authority. It's in the realm of generics that involves some expediencies, and we could talk about a number of illustrations. So we need to be careful not to err in that direction. All right, next time, we're going to talk about the conclusion to this lesson, and I'm going to ask you some questions, and I passed out some questions in Lesson 1. Now, you're going to have what next time when we come together? Going to have them answered. That's right. Now, most of you know in the classes that I teach, when we get to the question parts, that's not the time for us to reteach the lesson. What do we do when we're answering questions? We answer questions. Okay? So unless you have some question that goes beyond the question, something maybe you didn't understand, then we'll go over that. Otherwise, we're going to use these questions as a review.